Now, we're holding on Nun Vav Amud Aleph on top line. We were learning as follows. We were discussing the question of whether Chol Prat can be have to be one next to the other, or whether we can have them further apart from each other and still darshan them as a Chol Prat. So in that connection, we brought a Braisa, which seems to be darshaning a Chol Prat from a distance in connection with the question, in connection with discussing how we know that all chatoris have to be shefted in the north, that we would have thought we had a klal of prat to say that only the chatos of a nasi is shefted in the north, and in the end we have a binyan ab that says that all of them are. So we ended up saying that it wasn't really that, rather we were discussing how we know what the word oisai by the chatos of a nasi, of a king, the Torah says that you have to sheft oisai, it, in the north, which would seem to imply that no other chatos has to be sheft in the north, and in the end we have a binyan ab. So what are we using the oisai for? So the Gemara had started saying, first of all, that the word oisai teaches us that when Nachshon brought his chatas as part of the miluim, and the same with the rest of the nesim after him, then that didn't have to be shechted in the north. So we quoted in this connection a braisa that Rabbi Yehuda had said that the sur Nachshon did require smicha, and we learned that, in fact, from the word oisai. We learned that from a different pasuk, the Samach Yodei Arosh HaSarer. So now, when the pasuk says Oiso, you would have thought that the same way as it requires smicha, the same way as it requires smicha, maybe it should require tzafon, and the word Oiso teaches us that not the Sarer of Nachshon did not. We said, Reb Shimon had said, we learned something different from the words of Samach Yodei Arosh HaSarer comes to teach us that the Seiri Avod is Kechavim, have to have smicha done from them. So the Gemara says, Maskif L'Ravina, Tenach L'Rav Yehuda. Well, then that explains very well, according to Rav Yehuda, that was saying that the Sur Nachshon, according to him, we learn from a pasuk, does require smicha. We would have thought it requires tzofen as well, and therefore the word oisai comes to tell us that not. But what about according to Reb Shimon? What are we doing with that word oisai? According to him, he doesn't hold that the Sur Nachshon required smicha either. So why would we think, according to him, that it required suffering, that we need the word oisai, that we need the word oisai to tell us not? And Tosfos points out, it can't mean to tell us that the Seiri Avodas Kechavim don't require suffering because they don't require smicha, because they should be like all regular chatas. In other words, Melos, the story of Nachshon is unique among chatas. It's not being brought for specific aveda. Either all chatois, so either being brought by a yochid because of a specific aveira that he did, or in the case of Seiri Avodas Kechavim because of the tzibur did an aveira, or in the case of the chatois that are brought on Rosh Chodesh and on Yom Tovim and so forth, is because of aveiras as it talks about in Masechta Shavuos, where people may have entered the Beis Mikdash or eaten kodshim without knowing that they were tamei, and in a way where they're not going to be bringing their own personal korban for it, and therefore they have these communal korbanos for that. But the Sur Nachshon was not being brought for a specific aveda that had happened at that time. Rashi actually on the Psukim mentions that it was meant as a kapara for having sold Yosef, but that's not really something that would require a chatas. So therefore, you could say that it's unique among chatois. Therefore, so according to Reb Shimon, it wouldn't require smicha, and according to Reb Yehuda, it would require smicha, but it wouldn't require tzafen. But there's no reason to say, according to Reb Shimon, that the Seiri Avod is kechavim, which is what he's learning from the pasuk, the Samach Yodei Arosh HaSur, that tzafen should not equally that. So according to him, there's no reason to say that smicha should apply to the Sur Nachshon either. Therefore, there's no reason to say that the north should apply either, such that you should need the word oisai to be mamayatit, and it's clearly not being mamayat the Seiri Avodas Kechavim, because there's no reason to say that it shouldn't be in the north, since there are chatas for kapara like any other chatas. So according to Reb Shimon, in short, what are we doing with this word oisai, which seems to be a miut, only the sur of the nasi needs to be shechted in the north and not anything else, so we need to work that out. But before we do that, the Gemara answers that. Omale Mazutr, Vedir of Mori Ravina. So Ravina had brought up the question. So now, So Mazutra, the son of Rav Mori, points out to Ravina, you're asking only according to Rav Shimon, but Rav Yehuda Nami. Even according to Rav Yehuda, you could ask, why does the pasuk, what does one have to do with the other? Maidi Yisrabi Yisrabi, what was included by the Surah Nashon, that it should require smicha, sure, you have a ribui for it. Maidi Lo Yisrabi Lo Yisrabi, what was not included, you don't have a specific ribui for, you don't have. So why would we think that it would require, suffering? Such that you need the pasuk oiser to tell us not. There's nothing that suggests that it requires suffering. Just because it requires smicha doesn't mean anything. The chitema ilay matikra, you might have thought, had the pasuk not been mamayat and had not used the word oiser, have I'm in a taste of binyan av, then you would say, you could learn it from binyan av and say that, and then say, just like all chatois require smicha and require suffering, so does this one. And after all, it is called a chatas. But you would say no, smicha gufa. Well, if that were the case, if you were to say that it requires suffering, and it requires suffering because it is after all called a chatas, well, then by the same token, it would require smicha. Have a smicha gufa, lishtik kramine. The pasuk didn't have to say anything about smicha either. It didn't have to say, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the words, v'samach yoda arosh asur, which is where Rabbi Yehuda is learning from the fact that it says asur means also the carbon of nashon. The Torah didn't have to say it, the case of the binyan av. And we would have learned it by a binyan av, because after all, chatas is a chatas. Ella, obviously the reason we don't do that shah midyodas loyafinin, because we can't learn a one-time korban, the korbanis of Nachshon, and the other Nasiyim. We can't learn from ones that are brought in future generations. Hochanami shah midyodas loyafinin. Well, then the same thing would be true as far as suffering. So then in that case, we don't need the word oser anyway, because we would say that a one-time korban, you don't need it. It's not like any other chatas. It shouldn't require smicha, and it shouldn't require tzofen. Or it should require. So you should. If you were to say that it was like other chatas, you would say it requires smicha and it requires tzofen. If you're going to say it's not like them, then it shouldn't require either. If the Torah is telling us according to the Yehuda that it requires smicha, that's still not a reason to say that automatically because of that it should also require tzofen. So even according to the Yehuda, the question would be why we need the word oisay. So in other words, so the Mazutra is pointing out to Ravina, your question was what we would do with Oseh according to Rav Shimon, but the fact is, even according to Rav Yehuda, we don't really need the word Oseh or not. Ella notes, so we're going to say as follows. Oseh ton sofen ve'en ha-shoichet oin ve'en sofen. We're going to learn from the word Oseh a different point, which is going to be applicable to all chatars. The korban itself has to be in the north when you shecht it. But the shoichet, the one who's doing the shechita, does not have to be standing in the north, because as we learned back in Zvachim, whoever is shechting, because anybody can shecht, can be standing in any place in the Azara and stick out his hand and use a long knife and reach over to the tzofen and shech that way. There is a slight difference over here. Here Rashi says that he could stand in the Dorim and shech using a long knife. In Zvachim, Rashi phrases it a little differently, that he could stand in the north and in the south and stick out his hand towards the north. So the question basically would boil down to, does the knife have to completely be in the north or not? In any case, the point is, we learn that from the word Oisoi, that the Kohen himself who's doing the Shechita does not have to be standing in the, north. So the question is, did Rav Achia ask? Well, we don't need the word Oisoi for that. We learn that from what Rav Achia says. The Tanya, Rav Achia, the Pasuk says, V'shachat Oisoi al-Yerech ha-Mizbeach Tzofeina. The Pasuk says, you should shecht it on the north side of the Mizbeach. Again, what does it say Oisoi in that Pasuk for? So we have, till now we've been talking about Oisoi that it says in connection with the Sur that's brought by a king. Now we're going to focus on the word Oisoi that it talks about by an Oila. Tosfos points out that on the face of it, they are two different korbanos. One's an oila, one's a chatas, and we can't learn one from the other. So Tosfos wonders then how exactly is the Gemara thinking to learn one from the other. Granted, of course, the Torah says that a chatas is shechted in the same place as the oila, but that would tell us that by an oila it must be that way, but not necessarily by a chatas. But okay, then Tosfos discusses that a little bit. Anyway. So when it says v'shachat oisa yarachem mitzvah tzafoyna, matam adloima, what does the word oisa mean? L'fisha matzina b'makabel, sh'aymi batzafen, makabel batzafen. Now when it comes to kabbalah sedan, to receiving the blood and the mizrah, there the koyan has to be standing in the north and the kabbalah has to be in the north. And that we know, that we know in turn because the Rashi brings from the relevant Gemara in Zvachim, this is we say in morning davening, Shkutasim Vatsofen, the Kibul Domon, the Shoris Vatsofen, because the Torah tells us, V'loka Hakayim Midama Chatas, that the Koyim should take from the blood of the Chatas, and V'loka, we learn from there, Lo Yikach, means that he should take for himself, meaning that not only the Kabbalah has to be in the north, but the Koyim himself has to be standing in the north. And the Imamad Badarim the Kibbutz Tzafen, so if he were to stand in the south over the dividing line and reach his hand over and do the Kabbalah, even though the animal's neck is in the north, and he does the Kabbalah Pasal, the carbon would still be Pasal because he himself has to be standing in the north. Yochol Afzeh Kehen, you would think the same thing is true as far as the Shechita. Kamad Lama Oisoi, therefore the Pasal is the Shachat Oisoi, meaning Oisoi Bat Tzafen, only it, the carbon, needs to be in the north. V'lai HaShechit Tzorech Liyamit Elias Omer Bat Tzafen, the Shechit himself does not have to be standing in the suffering. So Tosfos brings up the point that is a chatas versus an ola, but the idea is, in other words, we're saying by an ola, it's ma'akir because we're saying once we establish by a chatas that it must be that way, and the chatas is learned from the ola, we're not going to therefore say that the ola is going to be any weaker than that. If we're learning from the ola to the chatas, then of course the ola itself has to have the same din. So we do need to say it. So we say it by the Ola, but we also say it by the Chatas, because otherwise you would come out that the Chatas is going to be stronger than the Ola, and after all we're supposed to be learning the Chatas from the Ola, or because the Pasuk is a hot Ola. So the point is that we're learning this din that the Chatas, the Ola, and eventually the Chatas have to be shechted in the north. We're learning from that Oisai. So what are we doing with the word Oisai by the Sur of the Nasi? So far the Gemara has gone through a few possibilities, which we had in the Simen at the end of the Omid yesterday. We had the Simen Nachshon v'Shachat Oifa Pesach. So far we went through the possibilities that it comes to tell us not the Sur of Nachshon. And we said in that case that doesn't seem to work because in any case the Sur of Nachshon is a kodshe shah, is a one time korban. So instead we tried shochet over here. So now we'll try another one. That was Nachshon and v'shachat. So now let's try another one. Oisei batzofen ve'in ben oif batzofen. So we're going to say the word oisei means that the shchita of a chata, of an animal chatas, has to be in the north, but the malika of a bird korban, of a bird oil or chatas, does not have to be in the north. You can do the malika anywhere in the Azara. And why is that? Why do we need to be told that? Otherwise you would have thought, leisei v'kavachomer ben sain. Otherwise you would have thought, v'kavachomer from a sheep. Or ma ben son shall I cover like koyin, ma doch by a sheep where the Torah does not specify that a koyin has to shecht it, and the fact is anybody can shecht a korban. Nevertheless, cover like sofen. Nevertheless, the Torah establishes that it has to be done in the north. Ben oif shall cover like koyin. Well, then by the ben oif, by the brood, where the Torah specifically says the koyin himself has to do the malika with his own body. wouldn't it be a kavachomer that it's established that it must be in the north? Therefore, the Torah would be telling us the word oisai by the sur nasi to tell us no. Only a sur requires shchita in the north, but a bird does not require malika in the north. But the Gemara says malav ben sanj, you can't cover like kli. Yeah, but you could slug that up because you could say on the other hand the sheep, the Torah tells us requires a kavi. You have to use a knife for it. So therefore you could say that once you have a chumrah that it requires a knife, then you would say that also requires tzofen as opposed to malika. By definition, it's not done with a keli, it's done with the kohen's own fingernail. So that doesn't work either to say that we're so far again. We've said we can't say that from Oisai we're learning anything about the Sur Nachshon. According to Reb Shimon, it certainly wouldn't work, and even according to Reb Yehuda, it was unnecessary. Ultimately, we would say we don't learn the certain action from any other korban because it's kodesh shah. We went through the possibility of learning about shchita having to be in the, that the kohen doesn't have to be standing in the north, but we shot that down because we said that we learned from a different drasha, from Rabbi Avchiya's drasha also on the word osei, but a different osei. And now we said it doesn't work to say by a bird as well, because by, you could, if you tried to make such a kavachomer, you would shlug it up. Ella, no, what we're going to say is, what we can learn from Osei, this will be the fourth thing from the simon that we had before, Osei Batsofen Vein Pesach Batsofen. It, the chatas has to be shechted in the north, but the korban Pesach does not have to be shechted in the north. You can shecht it anywhere in the Azara. As we talked about yesterday at the end from David Powder, I'm not saying for David, he says the underlying message of that is that when you come to many korbanos, you have to shecht them in the north to weaken the powers of tuma, which are associated with the north, as in the pasuk in Tzofen Tipasach Hara, the evil will break forth from the north. But when it comes to the korban Pesach, as a matter of technical halacha, you don't need to do in the north because it's Kodesh and Kalim. And Kodesh and Kalim can be shechted anywhere in the Azara. But the deeper idea behind it, the Rebbe Powder says, is because when we're talking about the Korban Pesach, we're talking about that all that the Ra has been nullified anyhow by the Makkos and Evan, by Yitzias Mitzrayim and everything, and therefore we don't need to shecht in the north. It's fine to do it anywhere. Anyway, the point is, we would learn like this, that so Osei would mean that the Pesach does not have to be shechted in the north. So Gemara says Pesach, you don't need the word Oisei for that. Midrab Elazar ben Yaakov Nafka. We learn that from what Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov explains. The Tanya, we learn in the Braisa, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Yochu Yehev HaPesach Ton Sofen. You would think that the Korban Pesach has to be shechted in the north. The Dinhu, and you would think to make a Kavachoyme for it. Uma Oila Shalekovalos Man Mishchitasa. Madachan Oila, where the Torah does not specify a time when it needs to be shechted. You can shecht an Oila, a person can bring an Oila any time and bring an and any day. Well, except for Shabbos and Yom Tov, fine. But the point is, within the day, there's no specific time that you have to bring it. Kovalot Sofen, and yet the Torah establishes that it must be in the north. Pesach, Shekovalot Zman Meshchitosei, the Pesach, which is specified, you have a certain time of day and a certain year, a certain time of year and a certain, and within that, a certain time of day, that you have to shecht it. And again, Shekovalot Sofen, shouldn't it be a Kavachomer that it establishes that it must be done in the north? Now, you would try to shlug off that kavachomer. You would say, Mala Ola, Shekhen Kolo. How can you prove from an Ola? An Ola is completely burnt on the Mizbeach, so therefore there's a greater chumer in it, as opposed to the Korban Pesach, has eaten. So you're going to say Mechatas. Okay, so we're going to learn from a Chatas instead, where a Chatas is also eaten. You're going to say, Mala Chatas, Shekhen Mechaperis al Chayvik Krisis. You're going to answer back that Chatas is Mechaper for people who are Chayv Karis. Tosfos points out that anyway, we might not be able to learn from a chatas anyhow, because in the sugya that we had in Ezo Mekoyman, that Lomed Min Alomed, where we learn one thing from another with one of the Yudgil Midas, and then we want to learn a third thing from the second thing, when we learn something with a Hekesh, can we then again learn from it with a Binyan Av? And the Gemara left that question open. Well, here, conceivably, we would be doing the same thing, learn the chatas from an Oila by a Hekesh, because it says where the Oila is shechted, the chatas is shechted, and then in turn learn from that by a Binyan Av for the Korban Pesach. Whether we can do that or not is unsettled in the Gemara over there. But in any case, even if we tried to do that, we would say, Malachatas Shekhen Mechaperis, a Chayiv Krisis. Yeah, but on the other hand, a Chatas is Mechaper for people who are Chayiv Koris. So therefore, you could say it has a greater strength, and therefore it has greater Kedusha and requires to be Shecht in the north. So you would say, Me'osham. So you would say, fine. In that case, try to learn the Korban Pesach by a Binyan Av from an Osham. An Osham is not Mechaper for Chayvik Krisis. All the cases that a person brings an Osham for is all things where there's a lab involved. Hashem Zelos, Hashem Ne'ilos, Shifcha Harufa, etc. All of those involve a lab. Like the Chatas, parts of it are eaten. So you would learn from that by a Binyan Av, by a Mamatzinu to a Pesach. No, you can't. Mala Osham Shekhen Kodshe Kodshim. Because after all, the Osham is of the class of Korbanos that are called Kodshe Kodshim. And therefore, you could say, so any Kodesh Kodeshim has to be Shech in the north, whereas the Pesach is Kodeshim Kalim. And in fact, Mikulu Nami, even if you tried to make a Tzada Shava between them, even if you wanted to say, you're going to learn from the combination of Ola, Chatas, and Osham. So you see, it's not the completely burning on the Mizbeach that triggers it having to be in the north, and it's not Mechapa or Chai Vekrisus that makes it, no matter what, though, all of them are Kodesh Kodeshim, whereas the Pesach is not. So anyway, from that, you would know that Pesach does not have to be shecht in the north. You don't need the pasuk Osei to tell us otherwise. So again, what are we doing with that word Osei? So the Gemara answers, Ela lo olam kedamin and meipar. We're going to go back to one of the previous answers that we had, namely that oisei batzofen ve'en ashrecha batzofen. It means that the korban itself has to be in the north. The one who shechts it does not have to be standing in the north. He can be standing in the south of the azara and reach over. Again, whether that means the knife itself has to be completely in the north or whether the knife itself can be partially in the south and it's a long knife and some of it reaches to the north, that's the different achronim discuss that point. But in the case, the point is that the person himself can be that the person himself can be standing in the south, and we learn that from the word oisei. I udikar kashalach midir Rabachia nafka. So you're going to ask, what do you mean? We're learning that from Rabachia's statement, where he said that we learn it from the word oisei that it says by the oila. The answer is no. Rabachia's drasha is not coming to tell us that the shochet doesn't have to be standing in the tzofen. In fact, that we can learn from the fact that it says by the chatas of the nasi that it says oisai, the korban, has to be in the north, implying the shochet does not. So we see by the sur nasi, and from that we can learn to all the chatos, and from that we can learn to the ola as well. Rather, Rabachia's drosha means ena shochet batzofen. The shochet does not have to be standing in the north. Avo makabel batzofen. But when he does kabbalas adam, then he does need to be standing in the north. So, in fact, how we learn it. So, ultimately, we use Rav Achila's drasha not to tell us that the shochet doesn't have to stand in the north, but rather to tell us that the mekabel does have to stand in the north. Rashi then brings up the question, so maybe you should say, but how do we know? According to Rav Achila, maybe the question would be on the contrary. Maybe it means that oisei means that the mekabel does not have to be standing in the north. Maybe the mekabel could be standing in the south. So the printed edition of Rashi doesn't have the printed edition of Rashi just has the question, not the answer. Shittim Kubetzes has the answer. Apparently, his manuscript of Rashi had the answer as well. The answer is that since the Torah is saying the word oisoi in connection with the shchit of a shochat oisoi, then therefore it's more logical to say that it's referring to something involving the shchita. But since it says oisei, it says that he, the one who shechts, doesn't have to be in the north. That implies that the one who's makabel does have to be standing in the north. Tosfos also discusses this point. Tosfos brings the same answer and discusses that why don't we learn from that to the chatas? Why do we need the separate word oisei by the chatas? So Tosfos says, because the Gemara says that given that what we're establishing now is only by Kabbalah do you need to be standing in the north, so now we just need a pasuk to be memayat that the shochet shouldn't be standing in the north. So in other words, what we say is, since the animal has to be in the north, then more logical, we would have assumed that the makabel and the shochet is the same thing, and specifically, therefore, the Torah tells us the shochet doesn't have to be standing in the north, implying that the makabel does. So that's basically how we're learning it. So ultimately, then we are using the word oisei by the sur of the nasi to learn a din that applies to all chatois, namely that the shochet of those does not have to be standing in the north. But on the other hand, the makabel does, and so therefore we actually need both drushes. So the Gemara says makabel milokach velokach nafka. What do you mean? The fact that the makabel has to be standing in the north, we learn from the fact that it could have said lokach in the pasuk. It could have said that he shechts it lokach midamapar, and instead vilokach, and he takes it. From which we learn that he has to be standing where the kabbalah is taking place. And we learned in Zvachim actually that the idea, one point of it is that we take the word vilokach and we rearrange the letters to form the word loikach. To himself he should take, implying that he has to take it to himself, and therefore, since the Kabbalah itself has to be in the north, then he himself has to be standing in the north as well. So we learn it from that. Why do we need the word oisa? And the answer is lokach for lokach leimashmalei. Rabbi Akiva does not hold that the vav over there is learning. We learn from this drasha. We learn this drasha from. Therefore, he needs the word oisa by the oila to teach us that point, and then the word oisa by the chatas. One to teach us that the makabel has to be in the north, and the other one to teach us that the shofar does not need to be. If we say that we do learn from the lokach, then we would use one of those oisois for a different drasha. Okay. In any case, the point is, the Gemara, this was all kind of a digression from the point. The Gemara was getting into the question of whether it's possible to have a klal of prat, where the klal is in one place and the prat is another, where we thought we had a braisa, which kicked off this whole discussion about the shachat oisai. We thought that we had a braisa that was in fact doing that, making a klal of prat from two different psukim, one in Parshas Vayikra, and one in Parshas Tzav, and we said that no, actually the braisa was getting it from the word oisai, and that brought us into this whole discussion of what exactly are we doing with the word oisai after all, given that in the end all chatoris do have to be shechted in the north. And we've gotten into that in turn because we'd been discussing the point that when the Torah tells us in one place that the mincha cannot be made chametz, loisa osa chametz, and in a different place it says it can't be baked chametz, loisa osa chametz. So we said that we're taking the baking to be a dover shahay b'chlal, the yotzim and a klal lamed, where it teaches us that every individual action that's done with a mincha that's chametz, a person is chayav malchus. But we said, why don't we consider it a klal prat? And we said, because a klal prat doesn't work when they're far apart, and that kicked off this whole discussion of whether a klal prat can in fact be far apart. So in the end, we're saying they can't be. The fact that we had a braisa that seems to imply that they could. In fact, it's not so. The braisa was actually using a different basis for its attempted drasha. Tosfos had pointed out, Rava in a Gemara in Nida says that you can do a klal prat that are a little bit far apart, but they have to at least be in the same parasha. Here we're talking about they're in separate parashas, one in Vayikra, one in Tzav, over 100 psukim apart. Then everybody would agree in the end, Now that we worked it out, that in fact you can't do a klal prat like that. So therefore we can't say that when it mentions baking, it's meant as a prat to limit the klal. Rather, we say on the contrary, it teaches us about the klal that just like a person is chayav malchus individually for baking a mincha that's chametz, so it is also for kneading it and shaping it and so forth. Okay. So, getting back to that point now, let's talk more about that point. The Mishnah had said, v'chayev al-lishosav al-rechosav al-afiyosav, a person would be chayev for kneading the dough when the mincha is chametz, and for shaping it, and for baking it. So how many malchus is he going to be chayev for? Omer papa, afa, if a person bakes a mincha, which is chametz like a shtayim, he's going to get two malchus. Achas ala richosa v'achas ala fiyosa. One for shaping it and one for baking it. He only baked it, but baking it, your papa is saying, is the completion of shaping it. You shape a loaf, but it won't keep that shape unless you bake it. So therefore baking it, is in effect considered that he finished the shaping of it. Achronim discuss. I mean, the fact is he didn't actually do a mice over there, but therefore the next explanation. In fact, that Rashi is explaining that Rav Papa wants to tell us that just the opposite. The shaping itself is not considered a mice until the bread is baked. So now, in other words, when you bake it, it means that retroactively you made, the one who shaped it, has now done an iser. So now, in effect, you've done two maisim, and therefore he's going to be chayav two malchus. Fasemis gives a different explanation. He says that what it means is when you put it into the oven to bake it, then that means, in other words, you made a change to it. You've changed it by bringing it from one place to another, bringing it before it was in the kneading bowl. Now you're putting it into the oven, and therefore that can also be considered shaping it. Okay, so the Gemara says, what do you mean? How could he be chayav two malchus? We said before when we were doing the limud on it on the previous amud that baking is unique. She maisi yichidi. It's a significant action as far as making bread. It's not a person to be chayav individually for that. And the same thing we learn for each of the other things: the kneading and the shaping and the basting. So therefore, we see from that braisa that he's chayav only one malchus. The answer is like Kasha, Hod Orichu V'Ofahu. The difference is, when he's chayav one malchus would be where he himself shaped it, and he himself baked it. So each one of those maisim he's going to be chayav one malchus for. When he does the baking, now you can't say that the baking should again be considered shaping it, because the fact is, he already himself shaped it. Now it's fine. You can consider the baking completes the shaping job, but nevertheless, you can still say that he's chayav for it. Whereas the other case would be where somebody else shaped it and then gave it to him and baked it. So now Rav Papa would be saying the one who baked it himself is, so the one who shaped it is going to be chayev for shaping it. The one who baked it now is going to be chayev, one for the baking and one for the shaping, because again, the baking is considered to be the end of the shaping based on what we said, either because that helps it keeps its shape, or because because he makes it now retroactively. Once he bakes it, he makes that the one who shaped it has actually done a significant action, or just because he's moved it from one place to another and thereby shaped it. Tosfos anyway has a whole different explanation of it. Tosfos has some questions on Rashi's explanation based on what the Gemara is saying at this point. And so Tosfos says, in other words, Tosfos understands that the question is that the baking is the implication of the Braisa is that baking is Maisi Yechidi, as in no other Maisa is being done at the same time, and therefore he's Chayav only one. So now the answer is that he finished, what we mean is when he baked it, he finished shaping it. So the Papa's scenario we'll be talking about, he shaped it, but he didn't finish shaping it. Now when he's about to bake it, he finishes shaping it. Therefore, at the time he bakes it, he's chayav another malchus. As opposed to the other case, we'll be talking about the other person did all of the shaping and he put it into the oven, didn't do anything else as far as shaping that. And the Zevach Toda, the Chofetz Chaim points out on this, and in that case, the Chiddush of it would be, we wouldn't say once it's possible, because again, once it was made Chometz, it's possible, maybe anything from thereafter should not make him Chayev. Nevertheless, it's still so, even if he did many different Maisim, because again, we say that Afia is unique, and therefore we learn from it to everything else. Okay. So what we're saying is over here, so far what we're saying is with a mincha, it doesn't matter that the mincha is already possible, nevertheless the person makes it possible again, a person does something else where it's possible, then he's still going to be chayev again. So now the Gemara is going to compare and contrast, and now the Gemara is going to contrast this with a din in the halachas of a bechor. You have it the same way as you have a mitzvah not to prepare a mincha as chometz, the same way you have a mitzvah not to make a mum in a bechor. So what about if the bechor already has a mum, are you allowed to make another mum in it, which is going to bear on this question of where the mincha was already chometz, is there any issue in making it chometz again? So it's not so much there can be, in other words, where he's doing another action, but there can also be, for example, it was already chometz, and now he's going to, for example, put more sourdough in, and again, make it, and again, make it chometz. So the Gemara says, Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Bechor she'ochze dam, if a Bechor, an animal Bechor, which is supposed to be brought as a korban, and when we don't have a Beis Hamikdash, then you have to wait until it develops a mum, and then you sheft it, and the Koyan eats it. So suppose the animal now is ochze dam, it was seized by blood. Seized by blood basically means, in other words, Scots, and in terms of the medicine of those days, it has too much blood in its body, and therefore you have to do bloodletting for it. In modern terms, that might include high blood pressure, it might include various other things where blood has to be let from the animal in order to cure it. So now it's a dangerous thing. The animal might die of it. Makizin oises adam, but makam shein oisin by mum. We can let blood from it, but only in a place where it won't make a mum. But you can't do the bloodletting in a place which would make a mum. Namely, for example, Rashi says you can't do it in the animal's ear or the animal's eye. Because those things, as we're learning, Masechta Bechoros next year, Best Hashem, you make a mum in the eyelid or in the ear, then it won't heal. It will never heal. You have a scar, whatever. The point is, it won't. You'll still have a hole over there. You'll still have a nick or a hole over there, and the animal will be a bal mum. So therefore, you can't do it over there. The animal is going to die without that. Doesn't matter. You still can't make a mum in it. Divrei Rav Meir. That's what Rav Meir says. The Chum say you could do the bloodletting even a place that'll make a mum. Now obviously if you have a choice, the Chum aren't gonna say Gav could do it in a place where it's gonna have a mum. But let's say medically it turned out that the only place to do it that's actually going to cure the animal is to do it in one of those places, then the Chum say, go ahead and do it. But eventually, yishchet al osim mum. Now, it is true that you can't then shecht the animal because of that mum, because the general rule is that you can, the general rule is you can shecht the bechor only if it developed a mum without you deliberately making it. Here, you deliberately made it. Now, the Chum say you had it, you were entitled to, because you had to cure the animal. Nevertheless, this is still considered that you, and you made a deliberate mum, and therefore it wouldn't, and therefore you wouldn't be able to shecht it because of that. Tosfos discusses that maybe actually midarad aisi you would have been, but the problem is the chachamim are concerned if you're going to allow that, then people are going to do haroma. People are going to start playing around over here, and they're going to deliberately do it in a place where it'll make a mum, even where that's not necessary, where they're not allowed to do that, and therefore the chachamim are saying that even if it was in this particular case medically necessary, then still we're still going to ask of him to eat the animal because of that. We'll have to wait till it develops a different mum. Reb Shimon says you don't even need that. Af nishchat alo yisem mum. You could even shecht it because of that mum, because it's called davar she'ein miskaven. You didn't intend to do it in order to make a mum. You did it in order to cure the animal. So therefore, we don't care, even though it is actually in a place that makes a mum. So in other words, the idea Rashi holds, Reb Shimon holds, Dovah She'en Meskaven Mutter in general. This comes up in Hilchos Shabbos, which we'll talk about tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. We'll talk about some Hilchos Shabbos. But in any case, Reb Shimon holds, Dovah She'en Meskaven Mutter, when you did something which turns out to be a malacha on Shabbos, but you didn't intend for the purpose of that malacha, then it's Mutter. So in this case over here, you didn't do it for the purpose of making a mum, so even though it made a mum, it will still be Mutter. What about its psik reisha? So the psik reisha is that you did the bloodletting. The question is whether then you can shecht it. So now when he's shechting it, so regarding the shechita, it's not considered a psik reisha, and it's not considered davar she'en miskaven. So according to Rashi, that's why Reb Shimon is allowing it, because davar she'en miskaven. Tosfos has a bunch of questions on Rashi about that. Tosfos brings from the relevant Gemara in Bechoris that Reb Shmuel says over there that halacha is like Reb Shimon. He doesn't say davar she'en miskaven is mutter. So evidently it's not because of davar she'en miskaven. So Tosfos explains the reason is because basically what we're going to say is in this case the animal already has the animal already in effect has a mum, are you allowed to make another mum in it, which is basically the subject of our Gemara over here. So now, in effect, the animal has a mum because it's about to die if you don't do this bloodletting, and therefore the question is whether you're allowed to make another mum in it. And so the Meir is going to say you can't, the Chum is saying you can, but you still can't eat it about it, because again, you might do harama, you might pretend as though this is the only place you can do the bloodletting when really you could have done it someplace else without making a mum. And then Reb Shimon is not concerned about that haroma and saying that, look, you are allowed, it's already a bal mum, you're allowed to make another mum in it, and therefore it would be allowed. And Tosfos goes on to discuss that in light of some other Gemaras on the subject. The Braisa continues, Rabbi Yehuda says, never mind all that. I feel a mess, even if the animal is about to die, in Makizim Le'is Adam, you can't do bloodletting at all, even if it's not going to make a mum. Because Rashi explains, based on a Gemara in Psachim, that Odom Bohol Amamoni, a person is in a panic because of his mama, and if the animal is about to die, and he's going to suffer a loss. Because like this, if he was able to shech the animal, he'd at least be able to recover the meat. Like this, because it's a Bechor, and it doesn't yet have a mum, so then he's not allowed to do that. So a person is very panicky about that, and he may not do things carefully. And therefore, if you allow him to do it, even in a place where it won't make a mum, then he may do it in a place where it will make a mum. And basically, Rabbi Yehuda agrees with Reb Meir that you can't make a mum in it. So Reb Meir just says, I'm not concerned about this bohol amamoni, and therefore go ahead and do it as long as you don't do it in a place where there's a mum. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, not even that. So you have four different opinions, in other words. So now the Gemara says, let's relate this back to the matter of the mincha. Amar Reb Chiya Ba'aba, Amar Reb Yechanan, Hakom Modim Mechametz Acha Mechametz. Now, even though, so we're talking about over here the Bechor Bal Mum, and again we're talking about that the animal is about to die because of it. Tosfos says slightly differently, because if we're talking about a case where the only valid way to make to cure it, the only medically possible way to cure it is by making a mum, then it's considered as though in effect already it has a mum. Anyway, the point is that everybody now, so there we have a machlokas whether making a mum in an animal that already has a mum is also or not. But Rabbi Chiya bar Abba points out, when it comes to a mincha, where you're not allowed to make a chametz, as we've been learning all this time, but they would all agree that mechametz acha mechametz, anybody who helps make it more chametz, which will include what we were talking about before, where the dough was kneaded and was already chametz, and then somebody else came and shaped it, for example. So then everybody would agree that the second one and the third one and so forth, each one is chayev, as we learned before. Because we learned before from the psukim, don't make it chametz and don't bake it as chametz. From which we learned, we said that we have davar shahi b'chlal v'yotzim and aklal alamed, that we learned that just like baking, he's chayev individually. So the same thing with each of the other ones. The Sfas Emes points out another meaning of mechametz acha mechametz can be where, for example, that the dough was already chametz and then he went and added more sourdough to it and made it more chametz. So you would think that he shouldn't be chayev, but we're saying that nevertheless he's still chayev. So everybody agrees on that. Rabbi Gershom in the Gemara in Bechoras has a different explanation that mechametz acha mechametz would be specifically where he bakes it. Once he bakes it, then he completes the job of making it chametz, and therefore we're saying that he would be chayim. So even though it was already chametz before, nevertheless, baking it now is going to be mechayim him again, like we said before. Similarly, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba says, b'mesaris acha mesaris. In the same vein, we know the Torah tells us you're not allowed to castrate a male animal, or person, for that matter. So now you have the same thing, mesaris acha mesaris. Suppose that one person castrated an animal, and somebody else comes and does another action with that, that would be another action which would castrate it if it hadn't already been done. So then also shechayev shehu chayev, that he would also be chayev. Dichtiv, because the pasuk says umoch v'chosus v'nosuk v'charis. The pasuk says that an animal that has had any of these things done to its genitals, you're not allowed to bring it as a korban. And the pasuk also says v'arutz chem loisasu, you're not allowed to do these anywhere. You're not allowed to do these anywhere in the world. Meaning any animal that's in your land or anywhere else in the world, you can't do even if it's cholin. Moch, Rashi defines them on the pasuk. Moch means where the beitzim have been crushed. Kosus means where they've been. Moch means more like squeezed. Kosus means they've been cut into pieces. So some more damage than moch. Nosuk means that they're cut off. But they're still there in the kiss, in the scrotum. V'chorus would mean they're completely cut off. Nosuk would mean they're pulled loose. V'chorus would mean they're cut off. So all those things you're not allowed to do. Now, you have to ask, let's look at those last two, the nosuk v'chorus. Nosuk means that they're pulled away, they've been pulled off. The ligaments that hold them in place, and chorus would mean that they're cut off. So you have to ask, imar chorus, so chayv, the person is chayv for cutting them off, al nosuk l'koshikin. How much more so that he should be chayev? That he should be chayev for noisik, because one way of understanding kodus would mean that he cuts them off. Rashi explains kodus means he cuts them, but they're still hanging over there. And then nosuk. So here, Rashi over here explains that nosuk means like this. Nosuk means that he completely pulled them off; they're completely gone. As opposed to kodus would be that he cut them and still left them in the scrotum. So if he's chayev for kodus, where he's leaving them there, how much more so nosuk, where he removes them completely? Tosfos has a bit of a different definition, which Rashi says similarly in the pasuk. So rather, the idea is that the kodesh would be partially cut off, nosik would mean completely, would be completely pulled loose, completely detached. Anyway, the point is that kodesh is less than nosik, so why would the pasuk tell us for nosik and then b'chorus? Rather, the Torah is telling us that even if one person did korus and another person came and did noisik, you wouldn't say, well, the animal is already castrated, the beitzim are already non-functional anyhow because of the korus, and therefore you shouldn't be chayev. Nevertheless, the Torah is telling us with the word noisik that he is in fact chayev. This, by the way, has relevance as far as in particular, it has relevance as far as prostate surgery. There's letters from the Rebbe over the years that talk about that there you have a real problem sometimes where someone in the course of the surgery, they cut various ducts over there, and that can create a problem. First of all, if it's a Jewish doctor, then you have this issue over here of castrating. And second of all, a Jewish man, the Torah tells us, a person of Jewish man who's injured in those areas is not allowed to marry a regular Jewish. Stay married to a regular Jewish woman, so that can create certain problems. So they have an urge there that you have to be very careful with these things and not cut anything that's not necessary. Basically, I think since then that techniques have improved. I'm not sure they generally need to do that, but in any case, so that kind of thing comes up as a matter in halacha nowadays as well. Anyway, so the point is, Rav Chiya bar Abba is saying, so in those two examples, when it comes to the mincha and when it comes to castrating an animal, both of those, even though it's already done, somebody who does it again is going to be chayav again. The machlokas between the four-way machlokas that we had before, the mayor, Rav Yehuda, Rav Shimon, and the chachamim, about the Bechor, if there again, where the Bechor was seized by blood, had high blood pressure, however we understand that phrase exactly. And the question is what we can do as far as letting blood. Can we not let blood at all, as Rabbi Huda says? Can we do it, but only in a place where it won't make a mum, according to the mayor? Can we do it even in a place where it'll make a mum, but then you can't shecht it because of that, according to the Chamin, or could you even shecht it because of that, according to the Bishimin? So the Machloikas would be specifically in that case. What's the underlying machlok? Because Rav Meir says, when the pasuk says kol mum lo yiboy, the pasuk says there shall not be any mum in it, and kol mum means any mum. So therefore, we learn from that that even if the korban already has a mum, then you're not allowed to make another. So we learn from that that you can't make another mum in it. That's true of korbanos in general. Now an interesting point. The Sefer Yireim brings up a point that it's one thing when it comes to other korbanos. Fine, when they develop a mum, you're going to have to take the value of them. You're going to have to sell them and use the value to buy another korban. But with a bechor, anyway, you don't use the money of it for another korban. Once it develops a mum, you just give it to the korban and he shechts it and eat it. So why should it be a problem to make a mum in it? So the Sefer Yireim says it's actually not minat Torah, it's only midirat banan, because then you might do it with other kodshim as well. And then he gives what he says is a better answer that we're talking about over here. The case is that the bechor has high blood pressure or whatever. So after all, you could cure it. So therefore, you still can't make another mum in it. And therefore, if you can cure it without making a mum, you have to do that. And even if the case is where the only way you could cure it is by making a mum, nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda is going to say you can't do it for the reason we said before, because then you might end up doing it in a place where it's going to make a mum. So Rav Meir holds that you are not allowed to make a mum, but Rav Meir would say that the only place you can do the bloodletting is where it won't make a mum. You have no right to make a mum in a case like that. But Rabbanan Savri, the Rabbanan say, it says in the pasuk Tamim Yelaratzin, it says it should be unblemished and be accepted for you as a korban, implying only when the korban is tamim do you have a problem making a mum. But when it's not tamim, then you are in fact allowed to make a mum in it. So therefore, that Rabbanan hold, you could even do the bloodletting where it'll make a mum. So first we'll explain those two svaras, and then afterwards we'll explain the other. Then after that, we can understand the other opinions. So the Gemara says, "V'Rameyu Nami Hoksiv Tomim Yilurotzen." But according to the Meir, doesn't it say Tomim Yilurotzen as well? What is he doing with that pasuk, which implies that the issur is only when the animal is tamim? The answer is Ahu Lemooti Bal Mum Meikra. That comes to tell us where to begin with. The animal had a mum from when you were makdish it, when in the case of regular korbanos, where at some point in your life, in their life, you makdish them. If at that point it had a mum, then there's no issur to make another mum on it. Another way of understanding that some achronim talk about is also if it went with a bechor, you're not makdish, it's born a bechor, but if it had a mum when it was born. So the pasuk will be telling us that tamim yilaratzen, as long as it was tamim when you were makdish it, or when it was in the case of a bechor, when it was born, as the case may be, then you're not allowed to make a mum in it. But if it already had a mum before that, then you would be allowed to make a mum in it. Sigma says you don't need a pasuk for that. If it have had a mum to begin with before it had kedusha, then in effect it's just like a tree. In other words, it only has kedushas damim. It never had kedushas guf in the first place. So of course you can make a mum in it. So what is Reb Meir doing with the words tamim yilarazin? Tosfos points out that the Gemara could have answered that it means that as opposed to if a person is makdish an animal nowadays where there's no possibility of bringing it as a korban, and therefore would be allowed to make a mum in it. But again, Tosfos says that the Gemara doesn't answer that because it seems that, again, you shouldn't really need a pasuk to tell us that. That should be fairly obvious. So what are we doing with the words tamim yilaratzen according to the mayor? So the answer is elof lamauti psula makdasha ma'achap yoinam. Rather, what it means is if you had an animal that was supposed to be brought as a korban and then it became posel, it had a mum, and now you redeem them. Now you're allowed to make a mum in it. And the reason why you have to tell us that, otherwise you would have thought, the fact is, psalam akdashim still have certain isurim on it. You're still not allowed to shear them. You're still not allowed to work with them. So they still have a certain residual kdusha. Maybe it should be also to make a mum in them as well. Therefore, the pasuk is telling us, and telling us that that's not a problem and you are allowed to make a mum in them. Okay, so that's what Reb Meir would learn from the words tamim yilaratzen. So again, Reb Meir is saying, since it says kol mum lo yiboy, means you can't make any mum in it, even if in effect it already has a mum by virtue of being seized by blood and being unable to bring it as a korban, but it says kol mum, any mum. But now we're saying, and meanwhile, when it says tamim yilaratzen, teaches us that psula mukdashim are not like that, and you're allowed to make a mum. Okay, but Rabbanan Nami, what about a point to the Chachamim, Papsil Kol Mum La Yiboy, but they do it with Kol Mum, which appointed a mayor means he can't make a mum at all, even if it already has a mum. The answer is Ahu, Miboyle Lichidatanya. They use it to teach us what it says in a Braisa, Kol Mum La Yiboy, when it says don't make any mum in it. Aimly Ela Shalor Yehidboy Mum, you would only know that it means that you can't directly make a mum in it. Minayin shelo yigrim lo yaideh cherim, but how do we know you can't indirectly cause a mum in it? Shelo yaneich botzek et vela al gabia oizen. For example, you can't put dough or juicy fig on the ear of the animal, kadesh yavah kelev yitlanu, so that a dog will be attracted to it and come and try to grab and eat the dough or the fig, and meanwhile it'll also, in the course of that, bite the ear and cause a mum in the ear. Tamad lema, kol mum, therefore the pasuk is kol mum, means mum, kol mum. It could have just said mum lo yiboy, instead it says kol mum, which means that you're not allowed to do it. You're not allowed to do it by a groma, by an indirect action like that as well. Tosfos discusses the various Gemaras about whether in fact we douch in the word kol in such contexts. But here the Gemara is saying that everybody would agree that we douch in from that word kol. So the Chumma learning from the word kol mum, and therefore they're not using it to teach us that one, that when the animal is already sick and needs bloodletting, that you should be able to make a mum in it. They say that not. You can let blood, but therefore they say you could in fact let blood from it, even in a place that makes a mum. However, you can't then shecht it because of that. Now, the other two opinions, then we understand. Rabbi Yehuda, we said, doesn't allow you to let blood at all. As Rashi said, odem bol amamoni, a person is in a panic over his mum, and if you allow him to do it in a place where it doesn't make a mum, he may end up doing it in a place where it will make a mum, and he basically holds like a mayor that you're not allowed to do that. Meanwhile, Rabbi Shimon would say that you're allowed to, either because of coins of Rashi, because Dov Hashem is scavin mutter, because he doesn't intend to make a mum, he intends to cure the animal, or coins of Tosfos because the whole reason why the Chachamim are saying don't shecht it and eat it because of that mum is because of Harama. He may be playing a trick. He may be pretending that the only place to cure it is in that place. And meanwhile, he could have easily done the bloodletting someplace else and not caused the mum. So the Chachamim are not allowing him to eat it because of that. Whereas Reb Shimon is not concerned about Harama, and therefore he'll allow you to eat it. Okay. So again, the point is, though, that there you have this machlokas because of out of doubt in the relevant psukim about korbanos, but in other cases like that, if something was already possible or already done, everybody would agree that there is a separate issur about doing it again, namely by a mincha making it chametz again, or doing another malacha when it comes to baking a chametz mincha, and also in the case of misaras, also in the case of castrating an animal or a person, where even the action was already done, then a person is chayav for the next action as well.